That bass sounds wicked, mate.
I love this bass.
Are you still in love with the bass?
Yeah. I play it, I pick it up probably more than I pick anything else up.
Yeah. It's slinky.
I gig with it. I love it. I absolutely
have you,
love it.
Have you played with another bass since you had it? Like gigged
like,
with it?
Like a gig? Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Yes. I did a gig on this Spectre that I have right over here.
Yeah.
I've done gigs on the Vorinsaku short scale that's behind me here. I have a hollow body that I've gigged with. Yes. But like straight up, like grab it. It's the one that feels like the most solid. Take it on tour.
Yeah.
Has been this actually.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
So there's no internal battle about which one you should take anymore. It's like,
it depends, right? Like the,
your old bass is just like weeping in the corner, just like dusty like and shitty.
The Fenders are weeping. The Fenders have been sat on that shelf right.
Yeah. That's what I mean. The Fenders. Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Man. Yeah. It's crazy. How about you?
Oh, I've got no idea, dude. I'm just so cold right now. I don't know what I'm drinking this because this is cold. I'm so cold. My nipples are like rocks.
Oh.
Anyway, what we're here to do today.
Oh man, we are here to show you some bases that I believe are going to be in the next giveaway. We're going to do that. We're going to talk about boutique bases. We're going to talk about pros and cons of boutique bases. What even is a boutique base?
Yeah,
right? Our favorite boutique bases, the big list. We have some examples. We're going to play a little. We're going to show you stuff. But I feel like first, we got to talk about what we're giving away. We're giving away some boutique bases as well.
People might not know what the heck we're on about. So like over the last 5 years. Ha, I got it. 5 years because it's the 5th year anniversary. Every single spring, we do this thing called Win a Base, Build a School, where we partner with Pencils of Promise. And we give away a bunch of bases, and off of that, off the back of that, raise a bunch of money. We partner with Pencils of Promise, and then we build schools out in developing countries to help, you know, kids in those areas get into schools, because there are hundreds of millions of kids that are out of school, and it's just an absolute, you know, travesty. So that's what we do. And we've been doing it for 5 years. We've built, I think, like 3 schools now. Unfortunately, I haven't got like a plaque in the schools that says it's from SPL. In my mind, I was like, do we get a plaque? Do I get a picture? Like, we don't.
Hey, no
but anyway,
picture.
Yeah. But we built these schools and we're going to try and raise money to build another one. And this year we're giving away, check it out, more prizes than we ever have before. More than ever. When we were kind of like ideating, throwing ideas around, Ian was like, how about the most prizes ever? So that's ultimately what we went with, the most prizes ever. So we've got a bunch of bases. We're going to mention them in just a minute. And then also we've got a lot of other stuff. We've got pedals and we've got free memberships and we've got all of this other stuff as well.
Yeah, we have cables, we have straps. All the stuff to get you started. And I mean, very cool, like really cool companies that are donating to this cause. It's incredible.
Yeah. And if you want to check it out, just go to winabasebuildaschool.com. So that's winabasebuildaschool.com. But check it out. It's completely free to enter. So if you want to get in a chance of winning this, it's totally free to enter. All you need to do is go to winabasebuildaschool.com and then enter over there. And the first one, just to bring it into shot here.
Baby.
I'm giving away, where can I hold it like this? I'm giving away this F bass, which is absolutely gorgeous. It is a one of one. It was actually, I bought this from a guy called Dave. Is it Dave? Sorry, Dave, if I don't get your name wrong. Anyway, he had it made for him. It was the owner of Slap Store out in, I think they're based in Chile. And he had this bought for him. I saw it and I was like, I need it. So I bought it off Dave. Anyway, I'm giving it away in this giveaway. It's absolutely phenomenal. It's got this beautiful olive top. It's got all of the, you know, all of the stuff and more. It's got a ramp. It's got gold pimpy hardware on it. And it's also, check it out. I've never seen an F bass like this before, but it's got maple wings. So maple wings and and an ash block as well with a beautiful neck. All that to say, it's absolutely phenomenal. I'm giving this away. Ian, you are giving away.
I'm giving away. There's going to be a lull, and a lull IMA4. It's not going to be this one. It's actually going to be like a super cool one-off paint job that we haven't revealed yet, but it's going to be a Mike Lull IMA4. And I was just saying before we started recording this, that this is the bass that I reach for. Yeah. I love this instrument. It's a collaboration. It started out as a collaboration between me and Spencer Lull from Mike Lull and became what I am really proud to call like my signature bass. This is the bass. When I go on tour, I grab it. When I'm going to most gigs, I grab it. I still play other things, but this bass feels like home. It's a combination of my two of my favorite instruments ever, a jazz bass body, and then Thunderbird pickups. But then the neck profile is kind of a cross between a P, a J, and a Thunderbird. I could talk about this forever, but I love the instrument. Big, huge reverse headstock. It's a little bit rock and roll. It's a little bit of a middle finger, which I love. Just a little bit. Just like, hey, there's something wrong with this. You don't like it? Hey. There's a little bit of that, which I like. Yeah. I love. And the back is all painted. Can't wait for you guys to see the finish that they're doing for this giveaway. It's like a one of one, isn't it?
And it's like this super special paint job. Basically, it's got like go faster racing stripes on it. Is that the vibe?
Maybe. We'll see.
Will people be able to go faster? Maybe.
Undoubtedly.
Yeah, undoubtedly. Yeah. And hey, yes. We've also given away more basses as well. So we've got, Dan, I've got like a list here, by the way. Got the F bass, we've got the Lull, we've got two Alintos, one of which you're going to be seeing today, which is insane. We've got a Fender Jazz Special, and we've also got a beautiful green, racing green. Yes. Music Man Stingray, which looks absolutely gorgeous as well. So, as I said, go to winabassbuilderschool.com and you'll be able to check out all of the prizes over there, and it is completely free to enter. Go do it. Now, boutique basses, dude. What even is a boutique bass? Well, and just before we do as well, just to give everybody sort of like upfront of what we're going to be getting into as well. We're going to be talking about what a boutique bass is. We're going to be talking about the ups, like what are the positives about boutique basses, but also what about the negatives? What about the dark side of boutique basses? And I, you know, transparently, I will say when I was putting together the positives and the negatives, my negatives outweigh the positives. We'll have to wait until we get there.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure you have a story too. I definitely do, of like spending the money, getting the thing, and then having it disappoint in a way that I was unprepared for.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So stay tuned. We're going to talk about what sucks about them as well. Obviously, we love basses, right? I mean, like Scott and I are crazy about basses.
Oh, dude, I've got all the boutique basses here. I've got like, I ain't saying don't buy the boutique basses.
Yeah.
I'm just saying
there's pros and cons.
There is pros and cons. And I think that the cons are interestingly stuff that a lot of people don't talk about all the time for obvious reasons, you know, because sometimes it sucks to talk about the negatives, but we thought it'd be fun to dive into those today. So we're going to be talking about the pros, we're going to be talking about the cons, and then we're also going to be talking about sort of like what are the classic boutique basses, who are the big six, then also like newcomers to the space, and then also the boutique FSOs. You'll have to wait and see what that is. The FSOs. Yeah.
Does anyone know what that means? I don't know what any acronym means, but I do know what that one means.
Exactly.
I know that one.
So, dude, you take it away. What do you feel is a boutique bass?
Well, I've got a lot of questions here, and I feel like the instrument that you're holding in your lap, like I was looking at that, I'm like, Jesus, that is like the picture of boutique bass. It like checks all the boxes. Yeah. So here, I'm going to ask you, I want your gut on this. I'm just going to ask you, criteria, what makes a boutique bass? Number one, is it about the price? Does price make the boutique bass? Does a boutique bass have to be expensive?
I think that given that boutique basses are usually made in small workshops, the price is just a reflection of that because it's not a mass manufactured thing. So ultimately, I don't think it needs to be expensive to be a boutique bass, but just the how it's built drives the price up. Yeah.
I love this answer. That brings me to this question. Does the size of shop or amount of employees make a boutique bass? So for instance, is Fender Custom Shop not boutique?
No, not. I don't think.
Not. because it's connected to Fender, because it's Fender.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there is no. So are you telling me? I'm just trying to stir the controversy, dude. You're telling me that there is no Fender that is boutique.
Yes.
Hey. Also, as we go, you guys, if we enrage you, or we leave something out, or you are like, yes. Hold on, but wait a minute. This, please, in the comments. It's been so fun to see all the comments come in on YouTube. So listen, if you're listening to this pod audio only, that's awesome. Thank you, audio listeners. But also, get over there. There's a completely different experience. You're going to get to see all these bases on YouTube. In the comment section below, please let us know. What do you disagree with? I mean, obviously we love when people are like, hey, this is great. And thank you. But also, like, are we wrong? We sure could be. But I like this. This is gut feeling from Scott Devine. I'm going to keep going. So I love that you said there's no Fender.
Before you do, one thing, just an ask to our audience. We don't ask many things of you, right? But just to, like, we have got a big hairy goal for our YouTube growth this year. Like a big hairy goal. We really want to hit 1.5 million subscribers. And I was like diving deep down in the analytics. And I was like, 60% of the people that watch our videos aren't subscribed. 60%. And I was like,
that's
whoa.
That's too many.
It's too many. So look, if you're watching this on YouTube, if you could click that subscribe button and subscribe to the channel, you have no idea how happy it would be, make me and Ian, but also the entire content team and team, frankly, at SBL. It's something as a team we're putting so much hard work into. And if you could click subscribe, it will honestly make our freaking day. We're checking them subscribers every single day. I embarrassingly admitted to Ian that I'm checking them more than every single day earlier. But listen, if you could hit subscribe, I will send you a virtual hug for the next 20 years, maybe more. Anyway,
wow, anyway, a long time.
Yeah, it's a long time. Hit subscribe. It will make my day.
Yes.
So, no, I do not think that Fender make a boutique bass, even though they're expensive.
Okay. How about this now? Can a boutique bass be Fender shaped?
Absolutely.
Interesting.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes.
Two jump to mind. Or should we get into that later? We'll get into that later. But yeah, I do think they can. And honestly,
you feel like this, we could classify this Mike Lull IMA4 as a boutique bass.
I think it fits into a certain category of boutique bass. I do think there's a difference, right, between something like an Alembic, a Ken Smith, and something like a Lull. There's a difference. One's multi-layered, multi-laminate, like that whole thing.
Yeah.
And
I like the separating the categories. I like that.
And then for like Sadowski, Lull, Alinto.
Yes.
Those styles of instruments are very much, they're like Fender influenced.
Does a boutique bass have to have a fancy top?
No.
Doesn't have to.
I don't think so.
But it doesn't hurt, huh?
It doesn't. Huh? Let me look around. I don't know. No, because check this out. Here's like a fretless F bass.
Ah, yes.
Yeah, like fully boutique, no top, just it's like a three-piece body, I think. Anyway, all that to say that it hasn't got a fancy-ass top.
Okay.
And it's definitely a boutique.
I mean, I see that ramp on there too and like the different shape. And how about this? Does a boutique bass have to omit a pick guard?
No.
Okay. So you're saying then that this guy here, We could call this a boutique bass.
Maybe, and maybe a boutique is actually just, and please, as Ian was saying before, let us know in the comments what you think about this, because we're just having this open, we haven't had this conversation, you know, we haven't worked out what this conversation, we're just kind of sort of like, you know, going with it. I think that boutique for me is kind of, it's the amount of people that maybe are working on the instruments that signifies whether it's boutique or not. Maybe that's it.
Is that the, well, I think it's a lot of things. I think the more things that you have of these things we're talking about, maybe that slides you more onto the boutique scale. But it's not just like, it's not cut and dry, although I love that you made the cut and dry with Fender. Incredible.
Yeah, I just don't see them as boutique.
Right.
I don't know.
How about
Sorry, Vincent. I know, like, Vincent van Trigde, I love, Vincent is a great, not only like bass maker, but guitar maker, just incredible. And he works for the custom shop. So yeah. I do have guilt over saying that they're not. I know, like, Vincent might have just sort of like spat. Vincent just spat coffee all over his kitchen. I'm sorry. So,
but I know what you mean. Yeah. If you think about a shop, like if you think about a boutique clothing store, it's not H&M, right?
Yeah.
It's not a big monster retailer. It's maybe a small shop that's maybe family owned, or it curates, it carries a smaller selection. When I think about boutique in a space that isn't instruments, I think about shop size and like maybe quality and price. That's, like I think about, it's not the stuff that you can find maybe at PMT or at Guitar Center. Even though some of those places carry some boutique things, they're maybe serving a different audience that's not looking for that level of zhuzh in an instrument.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Yeah.
Can I keep asking you? I got a couple more questions.
Go on, hit me, dude. Hit me.
Active? Do they have to be active?
No.
Agreed. They don't have to be active, but a lot are. Yes, a lot of them are. How about hardware? Gold hardware.
No gold hardware. No gold.
They don't have to have it, but a lot of them do.
A lot of them do.
How about this? How about this? Amount of strings.
No.
So, no.
But a lot of them have lots of strings. Yeah.
But so, like, if I hold this bass up, this is a Ken Smith from 1985, I believe.
Beautiful.
This is a bass. It's a four string. Yep. But this is a boutique bass, right?
Yeah, dude. Yeah. Yeah.
This is a boutique bass. Yeah. And to me, a bass like this, it's checking some serious boxes. We've got gold hardware. We've got active electronics. We have kind of a fancy top. This one happens to be like a neck through or maybe a set neck construction on this one. It screams artisan, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's beautiful. Yeah. There's a debate, or I'm not sure if it's a debate that many people are having now, but there used to be a bit debate back in the day whether a boutique bass could be made by CNC or not. Like, are they using CNCs? Yeah. So, and I think they can be. I think that boutique basses can be. And I think that a lot of the big makers now, like, you know, are using CNCs anyway. So I think that that's pretty much, that debate's gone. So for me, it comes down to the amount of people in the shop. How many people, how big's the company? And it's interesting to like a rabbit hole to go down. There's not one that's jumping to mind, but I wonder if there is a moment in time where a manufacturer goes from boutique to not boutique based on the amount of people that are actually working in there. So for instance, a guitar one would be PRS. There was definitely a moment in time where PRS were boutique guitar makers, right? Are they boutique now? I have no idea. I cannot tell.
Right?
I'm not sure. It's tough. It's definitely not black and white.
You know, the one that I think of in bass world is Warwick, or as you guys would say, Warwick.
Yeah, that's true, actually, yeah. Because they make a lot of bass as well, don't they? I don't think I don't think they're boutique, actually.
You don't?
No, I don't know. I do not see that Warwick's is boutique.
In the 90s, would you have thought differently?
Yes.
Same.
Yeah.
Because I think you're probably right. It crossed the threshold. Give me a number, Scott. Throw it out there. What's the number of employees that takes you from boutique to just a big old sellout?
I have no, I think it can be quite high. I think it can be like, you know, into the 40s or whatever. But yeah, if 50 people, I'm like, nah, I don't know.
Sure. Well, and you know, how about this? So I've got a base here made by Spectre, and Spectre has this custom shop in Woodstock, New York. Started out, I mean, Spectre was one of the original boutiques. Like, they started out, Stuart Spectre, Ned Steinberger, making this cool shape and doing these, you know, these things that were really, really not Fender.
I love Spectre, by the way.
Me too, dude. Yeah. Me too. Late 70s is when they started, and then he sold it to Kramer, right? And then Kramer was making all these bases, and then I don't know, it started to slide into maybe not boutique, but then he got it back. It was SSD, yeah. Right? And but now it's so interesting because he sold the company to Korg, so Korg operates Spectre, but there's a custom shop that makes these incredible. I mean, this is it's probably my favorite modern active.
Like, whether we think they are or not, right? Is it?
Yes.
It is. Because if you'd asked me, I would have said no. I would have been like, no, it's Spectre. And maybe that's because of what your point, like, because of the history. Everybody drags that shit with them, right? You know, you create, it's brand, isn't it?
Yes.
Brand is what, like, when you say their word, their name, that's what you feel in your stomach. At least for me, it's nothing to do with what the logo looks like. It's like, what do I emotionally feel like when I hear their name? That's the brand. And I think that when somebody creates that brand, like, whatever brand, that shit lasts for a long time.
Totally. Yes. And probably it is about that trajectory of the company and And then they're making all of these, you know, more inexpensive instruments, right?
Exactly.
So there's all of these Spectres out there that aren't $7,000-$8,000 super custom team built, you know, small team instruments. And so when you see those, you think, oh, okay, no, this isn't a boutique. But then there is a division, right? The custom shop that to me is absolutely is, and it's building them like, you know, Stuart and the crew were building them back in the 70s, and they were one of the original boutiques with
that
Ken
just shows
Smith.
How careful you need to be as a boutique based builder, right? As a custom manufacturer, you need to be so careful. I think, at least my belief is, when you're partnering with somebody else to make your instruments, you know, oh yeah, I'm going to partner with somebody in like China or wherever, or Indonesia, and they're going to like hammer out, you know, 1,000 instruments a year. Great. Well, but at what cost?
Yes.
I think that there are people that have done it. Yeah, I think Sadowska did it well with the Metro line. I think that Dingwall have done it well, but there are people that haven't done a great job of it. And I think that has had a knock-on effect on their brand.
Sure, yes. Yeah. Because you see maybe more of the inexpensive things. But I will say, there are players, though, that would really excited to get into one of those bases, into that brand, but not for $5,000, $6,000, $7,000, $8,000, $9,000, $10,000.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
So it sort of depends on who you are and what you want.
Yeah.
But I know what you mean. I know what you mean about, like, when you hear a brand, what you immediately associate with. I think that's part about the brand trajectory, but it's also part about how much we know about a brand.
Yeah. That's why PRS, think about it, right? They're selling a lot of instruments now. Are they boutique? Yep. Well, our guts tell us yes, right? Because of the brand. Because they
fancy.
Yeah, right. Whereas with some of the people, they might not have executed, because you can get cheaper PRSs as well, but they've executed it in a way that it's sort of like kind of separate from the main brand. Mm. Whereas if there's not a clear line of delineation between the two things, and it merges like it has with some companies where they've been expensive, but then they release, you know, and I know where, you know, it comes from. It comes from, well, if we make it too obvious that these aren't made in the shop here, then not as many people are going to buy them. So we'll try and make the value, the perceived value of these lower cost instruments, we'll try and make the perceived value higher. But what happens is it decreases the value of the actual expensive instruments and screws you down the line.
Yeah. Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It's a cool rabbit
hole. It's wild.
Yeah. Should we get into the ups and downs? I'm really excited to hear your downs. The ups are kind of obvious. What do you want to do? Let's do the ups first.
Yeah, let's hit them with the ups, man. Yeah. What do you got? Do you want me to go or you want to go?
I'll take the first one. So my first up is, it's kind of like Limitless. Oh, yes. You've seen the film Limitless?
No, but
well, this is the base version. It's like Limitless,
like
ultimate power.
The woods and the just put it all together and it's gonna craft the incredible recipe.
What? Yes, it's that. It's like you have the chance to go and work with a luthier, and craft this amazing instrument.
You have like input
pickups.
Yes.
Depending on what manufacturer you go for, because some, I will say, aren't that. Some are actually like, this is our recipe. You can make tweaks here and there, but right. This is our recipe. So yes. I would say that F-Bass are that, right?
Yes.
So you have got a certain amount of...
Who else is that?
Yeah.
This.
Yeah, exactly, right? Yeah.
Wall.
So you've got a certain amount of customability to it. Same with Wall. I would say this same with Ken Smith. Ken Smith is legendary for it. It's like, no, it's his pickups, it's his bridge, it's his electronics. Oh, I want EMGs in that.
Not going to happen on a Ken Smith. Right. You're right about that.
It's not the move, right?
Right.
But you know, there's limited customability. But customability? It is today. It's a word today.
Customability.
Customability. Yes. But some like boutique manufacturers, they're just sort of like, you can do anything.
You're
like
it on.
Inlays, pickups, like everything basically. So, you know, that's cool. That's real fun. So I think that that's a kind of positive, and we'll get into that in a minute. But yeah, kind of positive. What about
seems positive in the beginning?
Yeah, seems positive in the beginning. Yeah. We'll get into that later on. Hit me with one of your ups.
I have that on my list too. I'm also so that's on my list. I have it as customization. I'm going to also go build quality.
Yeah.
Right? Because if you're working with one of the greatest boutique manufacturers, the build quality is going to be considered. It's going to be great. Like, you're going to pick up an instrument, like you pick up a Smith, and you look at it and you go, dang, this is crazy. Like, this is a lot of effort to put into this. But even like, you know, what I was holding this Lull, I remember when I first got this, I was like, God, everywhere you look, every joint, every place that a screw goes in, every place you interact with the instrument speaks quality. And that's what, you know, I think that experience is what a good boutique experience or manufacturer should offer. And obviously, you know, there's things that get screwed up and there's mistakes, but that's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for a level of detail that I don't find at a big box store when I'm picking up an instrument that costs $1,500. And I think that's, to me, it's a big deal. The build quality component is a big deal.
Yeah. For me too, it was on my list. Another pro for me, kind of linked with build quality, is playability. Playability and setup, because there's so many mass manufactured instruments where the setup is a complete piece of shit.
Yes,
like totally. Awful. Like you go into sort of like a regular, you know, sort of like a, I guess, sort of like a mass instrument music shop, right? And you pick up any of those basses, and just the setups on those things are shit. They're crap. And I'm like, these are really big bass manufacturers, and they suck. If anybody's wondering why they suck, it's because they make so many of them, and they're trying to decrease the amount of time that instrument spends on the bench, so they can ultimately make more margin, more profit, right? So they don't want somebody sat with an instrument setting it up for 3 or 4 hours, right? They want it on that bench, they want it checked over, and then they want it out. And in many cases, there are a lot of instruments on the lower scale in terms of price that are set up by people that don't play guitar or bass. Check it out. They've got a measurement chart. They go through all of the measurements, and then they sit there and go,
and see if it buzzes or right.
Yeah, they do that. And then it doesn't. Okay, it's out the door.
Sure.
You're buying it. You know, that's what you get. So, yeah. So playability is huge. I think you're going to get somebody to really take care about the playability of it. Now, I'm not to say that you can't do that with a cheaper instrument. You could get it. You could take it to somebody like a, you know, a workshop and get it set up. Great. Also, there are basses out there. The one that always jumps to mind for me, a Sire, which are lower cost, but set up great. So I'm not painting everybody's with the same brush, but I'm just saying that, yeah,
yep.
Like when you are working with a luthier, it's kind of like built in that it's going to come with a great setup.
Yeah, that you're going to take it out of the case and maybe be able to take it to a gig. I mean, there might be some things that you need to do to adjust it to your own preferences, but it's not going to be atrocious. Like, typically, hopefully, right? If it is, then there's something, wow, that's really wrong. That's not been the experience that I've had with most of the boutique builders and basses, you know, that I've checked out. I will say this though, one quick thing about the playability thing. You do have an opportunity with a more inexpensive instrument, mass produced, went through the checklist. Okay, it's fine, out the door. Now, there is value in purchasing that and then taking it to someone wonderful to have it set up.
Yeah.
So it's not that one of those instruments that you buy at a big box store can't be great, that it can't have a setup like a boutique. In fact, if it goes to somebody great and they really know what they're doing and they fret file it and the nut right and get everything, you know, truss rod, everything is amazing. Wow. Actually, you can have a very inexpensive instrument play really well. It just doesn't typically come that way. Then that is up to you. Right. And then finding somebody that can do it, bringing it to somebody who knows what they're doing. Yeah. That's just an extra step that you have to go through. So the price might be lower, but there's like a bigger risk involved of like, well, what's the setup going to be like? You know, how are we going to, but it can be done. I just wanted to say that.
Oh yeah. Like I've played lower cost instruments, like a lot of them that have played as well as like, let's put it out there. Boutique instruments, they don't necessarily, it's not like they all play better than cheaper instruments. They're just set up better. You know, they came made, you know, they're made out of the same stuff, wood and metal and right? They're all made out of the same stuff, right? So they all ultimately can be made to play great. But as Ian was saying, one of them comes like playing great straight out of the box. Other ones sometimes need more
work. You got to work for it.
Yeah. So playability was mine. Have you got another one on your list?
I have this thing, clarity, because I sort of feel like when I plug into a boutique, and it's probably connected to playability, but I can play it all over the place. It seems like it goes for a different level of clarity, maybe in the note. And I think some of that is like... Yes.
Like all over the neck, yeah.
Yeah, and maybe it's also a function of how the electronics sound, right? And it's the whole package of... It sort of goes for a different target than maybe a P-bass does.
Yeah.
P-bass is kind of meant to be... I think. I mean, obviously you can get a P-bass to play beautifully everywhere, but...
Could get a P-bass boutique.
Oh, is there such a thing? I think there is.
On the P-Bass, the P-Bass boutiques, Oliva Capollo.
So absolutely.
Like they're fully boutique and they're like Jimmy really focusing on making them sound just like a 60s P-Bass. So I'm not sure, dude. I'm not sure whether you can let clarity sneak through that. But I get it. It's more like...
Yeah, okay. I see what you're saying.
Playability I understand the thread that you're pulling on though.
I had it written, playability is the word to use. I wrote down as agility because I sort of feel like when I get on something that's boutique, I feel like I want to do more, play more notes.
Lunge. Do some stretches.
Deep lunges.
Yeah. You sort of rip into the splits.
Yeah, I want to play more chords. I want to, you know, and I mean, God, we're getting precariously close to cons too, right? Because I mean, this could be, you know, just because you could lunge, do the deep lunge on your bass doesn't...
Maybe this is like a con, yeah. Every time I play a boutique bass, I want to do a deep lunge.
What is the like deep lunge equivalent on the bass? Is it some tapping figure, you know, some crazy? What's the deep, you know, like, just like, look at me. Look at me go.
Dude, is this.
It's clarity of B string as you detune it. Yeah, it's Dingwall. Oh, it's great. I mean, dude, I got some cons. I bet you do too.
I've got
some cons. Any more? Are there any more pros for you? Oh, I got one more. I got one. Maybe you do too.
Yeah, like mine is that you get to, if you're buying a brand new boutique bass, you get to work with somebody at the top of their craft. You know, somebody that really loves and cares about, you know, that whole thing. So I think that that's a great experience as well to have.
Yes, yes. And I have here support a small business and serious craft. Exactly right. That experience, like, honestly, man, when I went through the Spectre Custom Shop and
like going to the farmer's market.
And I don't know that they offer at the Spectre USA Custom Shop, I don't know that they offer this to like just anybody, but I got to go through there and like do like, you know, and I mean, I don't know. Did that make this the most amazing five string? Yeah, maybe yeah, it did. Yeah, but yeah, like, yeah. It's incredible. That experience is really cool. I got to like pick out the wood for the fingerboard, and Will, you know, the shop manager was like, write your name on it, and gave me like a silver pencil. And I was like, oh God, really? Very He's like, well, cool. You know, I mean, we sand it, you know, I'm like, oh. You know, like, man, that process was incredible. I got to pick out this crazy, like this top is like a combo of flamed and spalt.
Yeah.
Like it's
all the way through the body.
No, so it's half, it's a sandwich. Right. And then on the back, it's classic flame. Got like it.
What are the pickups?
So these are EMGs, EMGs in vintage locations, this was a prototype of that. So I helped them, I helped them with a few ideas and with a project that they did where they revised their shape. I didn't help with the shape, but
look, lads.
Well, I mean, look, in a lads, way,
you gotta get like, this shit together. Go.
I was like, let's. I feel like we ought to, you know, you guys ought to offer a different pickup spacing, and you know, and they thought, I don't know, and then they went with it, and they really liked it. I mean, this bass, it's insane. Whenever I play it, it's crazy, man. So. Yeah, that experience too connected me to this instrument more, you know, like seeing all the raw materials laid out on a table. And then I went and they opened the case and we did this like video reveal. Are you kidding me?
Did it smell good?
Yes. And it's just, God, the back, like this is, check this out. This is crazy. This is like level of boutique detail. Gloss, transition, matte. Do you see that? Like it's crazy. So the body is all glossy, like thick gloss, and then it transitions to a matte finish on the neck.
So it feels better when you play it.
Oh, it's incredible. And that's all somebody sanding. It's people, you know?
Did you ask them for the matte neck?
Yeah.
Oh, wild.
Yeah. So all those little things, crazy, just little things that matter to me. Like I like the subtle shape of the Schaller tuners a little better than Hip Shot. So they did these cool custom, they're kind of thick, chunky, like the old, you know, like old timey ones, you know, and they sign the back of the neck of the headstock, you know, and they do like this truss rod cover is made out of the same wood as the fingerboard. Yeah. Right? Like, you know, and F bass cool does that kind of stuff too.
Yeah.
But that experience was a big, big deal. Big deal to me. You know, it was like,
I can remember I've always wanted to do that. And you were like super stoked about it. You were just like, oh my God. It's amazing. Yeah.
It's incredible. So yes. And I've got one more that actually bridges the gap, dude.
Oh, go for
Into the cons. Are you ready? Are you ready to get into the shit, Scott Devine?
Yeah.
What sucks about these? This is a pro and also a con. It says something. The boutique bass that you choose to play says something about who you are and how you play.
Yeah.
And that is a double-edged sword. Right?
Yeah. I don't know what, like, can I just tell you what, in my mind, what I thought as you said that? I thought about, you turning up to a studio. You, like, there's a bunch of musicians all working in the studio. They're all waiting for the bass player to turn up, right? Everybody's yep. getting their gear out and stuff.
Yep.
And you open your case, and it's just this sort of like super boutique. It's like seven strings. It's like the top's insanely flamed. It's just
I'm like, hey guys, are you ready for the blues session today? And this comes out of the case,
and then everybody's like side eye and just been like, oh my god, like what is going on? Yeah, so it can say something, can't it? Something negative.
Yeah, and what, typically, and okay, this is all about your own comfort level, your own, right, like your insecurities, right? Because maybe it's like, who cares? Play what you want to play. Don't let anybody, but man, I will say, picking the right thing for the gig, I think has actually been very important to me. So there was a time that I played a Carvin six string all the time. And I remember showing up to something and just kind of like, I didn't fit. And when you show up with a big number of strings for something that doesn't require that, I think people you're just fighting a little bit uphill right from the start.
It's an unfortunate truth. So just before, because I imagine everybody's like, hang on, I'm going to leave a comment. This is not the way things should be.
Well, do it. Leave that comment.
Hey, we're not saying it is the way things should be. It's an unfortunate truth. It's like, it's like if you turn up to the studio session and you're wearing tight spandex, right? You might feel really comfortable and you might be into that shit. But it says something about you. And I know it's funny, but it is actually the same kind of thing. It says something about you. And, and I have not worn spandex, but it looks incredibly comfy. Put it in the
freedom. Oh, and I mean, you could deep lunge in the spandex. Oh, yeah. That's way better, dude.
Hey, how not to get a gig? Turn up with your seven string in spandex.
Yes. Yes. I mean, and look, there are situations though where I've had the opposite, man. I did a thing that leaned more like gospel and R&B, and I turned up with an old school P bass thing with flats because I wanted to kind of go that R&B, but it wasn't the right call. So I showed up with my 51 custom shop Fender because we're doing some Jackson 5, but we're also doing some more like modern stuff like Chaka Khan. And I thought, oh, but this is going to be cool because this is old school and it's sweet. But it was in a scene that honestly having like an active five or six
was the move.
So it goes the other way too. You just have to be aware. And when I showed up and I saw the guitar that the guitar player was playing, I was like, damn it. I think it was, it was PRS or it was something and it had a fancy top.
You knew.
And I was like, shit. Yeah.
They wanted the, and it's a very specific sound. They wanted the, like the Ken Smith or the MTD or the, like that kind of sound. Yeah. Yeah.
And I just made the wrong call. And I wish that I could have gone home. I was like, there wasn't enough. I'm like, God, I should go get another bass. And there wasn't time, And so I'm not just saying it's kind of like a one, it's really narrow to say like, it's the extended range boutique bass player that's always going to be the heel or the butt of the joke. That's not true. Yeah. You show up in gospel church with a P bass with flats, it might not be the move, right? Or something that's really vintagey, a Gibson, imagine, showing up with like a short scale Gibson EB2.
Yeah.
In like a modern gospel church environment. No, not the vibe. So it's not just, it's not just like the vintage snob or like, oh, it's got to be a Fender or vintage style thing or nothing. No, I mean, in certain contexts, it's the opposite. And it makes me want to buy an MTD, like I hear Goucher, and I hear just, and of course, Hubert Eaves. And I go, oh man, that I'm just not in that world.
Justin Rains,
like, man. Killer.
Yeah. Yes. I will. Yeah. So another to jump into another, I guess like a con, the dark side, right?
Yes.
Laughing about the dark side. It would be the expense of it as well. Like just
price.
Yeah. I'm just going to say it out loud. The distance between something that's going to cost $600, $500, $600, and something that's going to cost $6,000 or $16,000. Yeah. The distance in price isn't the sound.
It's not going to be audible. Very true.
Yeah, you're just not going to be able to hear it.
Absolutely right. But it will get you that level of customization, build quality, bespoke, handheld experience that we talked
about.
Get
all of that. It's going to come and it's going to play great, but it's not going to make you sound any better.
Damn right. Damn right.
Like it's just not. It's not going to make you sound any better. I forgot a pro, actually. They can be really inspiring to play these types of instruments. I'll put that out there as a pro, which means ultimately you're going to pick it up more, you're going to play it more, and you're going to become a better player because off the back of that. Mm. I found that when I can remember when I got my a PRS when I was like 15, and I played that thing every single day. My dad did not have to say, hey, do your practice, because I was like rocking out on that thing because I loved it because I was inspired by it. So that is a pro. But hey, but I didn't sound any better than on my $200 Squire that I was playing beforehand. I just didn't. So it's really easy to look at the catalogs. Hey, dude. 45,
that's what we did. Dude,
45, baby. It's really easy to look at the websites and watch the YouTube videos of the flashy players. Right. That, unfortunately, is not going to be, you know, it doesn't come. You don't pay the price and then suddenly you play better. It just doesn't. So it's really, really important that you understand that going in, because otherwise you're going to pick up that bass and you're going to play exactly the same as you played the cheaper bass. So it doesn't really, it can be a con that people think going into it that they're going to spend more, that it's going to play better. Or they're going to play better, I should say.
Or they're going to be better because of it, or sound better. And in some ways, because of the agility, the clarity, you know, like the sound of these things, they can actually accentuate your bad playing. Right?
Yeah,
there's all this, there's all this treble, they're bright maybe, and you know, you're squeaky and you know, your fretting is sloppy maybe, and some of that stuff gets actually
really unforgiving, like a Ken Smith. Like Ken Smith's like, I love the Ken Smith sound. I think in the mix as well, they just kill. But if you're just starting out and you play a Ken Smith, it's going to be really, really, really unforgiving. You're going to hear all of the little pop squeaks and farts that you don't want people to hear.
Like, dude, there is nothing. There is nothing worse than this on a Ken Smith, dude. Yeah. Right? Yeah. Like, try to play a D. You know, but if you're fretting properly,
woo! Oh my word!
Right, but if
remember
you don't,
when we were watching Winston Blissett play with Massive Attack.
Oh, it's
a couple of weeks back playing.
Yes, there's
a clip of.
I know, man. Yeah. So you've got to have your shit together, right? You have to have your shit together.
Yeah.
In order, I think, to sound good on one of these instruments. And you don't have to be a burning fast chops machine, but I think, and maybe one of these instruments would encourage you to get it together, right? It's not like, oh, you have to, and then, I'm not gatekeeping. I'm just saying, don't think one of these will make you sound better if your technique isn't together. It might make you sound worse because they are mirrors. Like
depending on what it is, but like stuff like that. Yeah. Like the Smith. Yeah. God damn. Just, I want to just say that I love Smiths, man. Like they just sound so unique.
They're cool. It's a strong flavor. Flavor for sure. Hey,
I'll give you another con.
Let's go.
That the bass that you want, like you really want it.
Yeah.
The bass you want, isn't the bass that you really want, because your visuals, what you want it to look like, just get in the way of the sound. You get so hoodwinked by the fancy top.
Oh yeah, dude.
And the, you know, like, and all of that stuff, you just get hoodwinked by it, and even though you say these words to yourself, you're like, hey, whatever it looks like, the fancy tops, it's not going to make a difference to the sound. Mm-hmm. But you don't believe it. Somewhere deep in the darkest depths.
Yes.
You are telling yourself this bullshit.
Yes.
That you're like, actually, it's going to be better.
Oh, yeah.
And it will make me play better. Like all of that stuff. Right. So ultimately, that the bass that you think that you want actually isn't the bass that you really want. Right. So,
right.
And this can come in multiple different ways. The way that I like to think about it is that they just get overexcited by options and they just add in all of the options to the bass. And ultimately, yes, there is a real strong argument that that isn't the move to make. And it does have a impact on the sound, right? So it could be, this could go in two directions. You might be into James Jameson and, you know, Duck Dunn and like, you might be into all of those guys, but you get just sort of like, you know, you smell that boutique.
What is that over there?
And I've been that guy. And you end up buying something that's just completely not in aligned with like how you want to play or how you want to sound. Right.
So yes,
that's one thing that happens. But the other thing is that you just get hoodwinked by all of the fancy pants stuff. And that doesn't have any effect on the sound. And in some cases, there will be people or are people that strongly, what's the way of putting this, that strongly believe that the more fancy stuff, the fancy amounts of wood, the more joins in a bass actually has the opposite effect on the sound. It actually decreases the fundamental kind of like juiciness of the tone.
The connection, the resonance, the something.
Exactly, yeah. We were talking with Carrie Nordstrand, who has built all of these basses. So a lot of people will know of and have heard of Nordstrand pickups, right? They're in many, many, in Ibanez and all of the basses now use Nordstrand
pickups. Tons of basses,
yeah. Tons of basses, right? And he back in the day, he used to make real slinky boutique basses.
Yes.
Multi-laminate, like the full thing. He also makes a lot of Fender-looking instruments. P basses, J basses. And he was like, look, I've done a lot of experiments over the like two or three decades that I've been making instruments. And in his experience, it's the ones with the least joins sound the best in his experience. So one piece bodies or two piece bodies, not like three piece bodies with laminate tops and multi layers and all of that. And look,
right,
I know that it's murky. I know it's not black and white. I know. Like I've just said, hey, I love the Ken Smith sound. Ken Smith is about multi-laminate instruments. But all that to say that one of the cons is it's really easy to end up with an instrument that really doesn't match what you need or really want. You like the visuals just get in the way of the tone searching that you're doing.
Because we hear with our eyes and not enough people admit it, but we are often drawn to instruments by the way they look first. Yeah. You see a performance and you go, what is that? Whether it's an amp, right? Or an instrument, or you see it in a catalog, no more catalogs. You see it online, you see it on Instagram. And if it looks great to you, then your brain is going to say, and I think it sounds good too, right? And your brain is like, yes, it sounds good because look how freaking good it looks.
Yeah.
I mean, and I'm just calling myself out on that too, that I am so susceptible to that. Even still, I'm like, oh yeah, the purple one's going to sound better for sure. Or like, the one with the crate, oh, the Wenge, you know, I'm like grabbing this wall. Oh man, you know, the Wenge facings, the top and the back. Ooh, it's going to add the warmth, the mahogany core. I mean, I fall prey to it. I like it, even if it's bullshit. Like I kind of get it. I just get a kick out of the mystery of it all because it's not, here's the thing, dude. It's not 100% bullshit. Wood definitely like wood does. I think wood does make a difference. I've played like Spectres back to back that were identical other than fingerboard or other than their top wood, and they're different. And it could be that, hey, no two instruments are the same, but I do think that wood makes a difference. I'll plant that flag. There are people that are like, no, you put pickups in a log, and they definitely make a difference to the playing experience. Yeah. Maybe if I were blindfolded hearing audio files, I'd have a harder time hearing it. Please don't, God, don't make me do that. I'll just get it wrong. And everyone's like, you're an idiot. And I might be, But the playing experience would matters and the visual experience. But I agree, dude. It's a long-winded way of saying I agree. We hear with our eyes. You might get burned by that.
Yeah, it's super easy to be burned by it. I have in the past. You have. Here's another one as well that kind of like goes along with it. It's a little different. Is your hit rate of going through the process of having this base built, right? You choose all of the options. Mm. You're on the internet. You're like looking at, is it Nordstrom pickups? Is it Bartolini? Oh, no, wait a minute.
Oh yeah,
it's right. EMG. Right. It's EMGs? No. It's Nordstrom. Right. That, like going through what tuners pick up, fingerboard wood, body. Your hit rate of going through that process is going to be not as you want it to be. It might be 50% or lower. And what I mean by hit rate is going through the experience, ordering the bass, you get the bass, and you've done all of your due diligence, you've done all of the research. This bass, right, should be your dream. This bass
absolutely.
Is like, you can basically die tomorrow a happy guy,
yes. Right?
But it's not the reality. And that is why there's a shit ton of boutique basses for sale on Reverb, because people went through that experience and they got the bass and they decided, this wasn't the bass that I wanted. So the hit rate is like, let's say 50% or lower.
Hit rate, yeah. And I have that too here. I have it as option anxiety in build and electronics, right? There's so many damn options. It's like trying to choose something to watch. It's like, oh, there's so many great things to check out. What do I do? And that can be difficult. That's why sometimes it's just nice to have a manufacturer that's like, here's what we do. We do this, and this is, you know?
You're taking it words right out of my mouth. That is why that I think that though a lot of the builders, let's say, who do we mention earlier? F-Bass, Ken Smith, Wall. I'm sure there's people that don't do this, but these, they're my favorite type of boutique builders because they don't give you all the options.
Right.
They're like, oh, this is what we do. And you can make a few tweaks and that's it. Because that means as a customer, as a buyer, I can play one of their basses, the one that I'm not buying, obviously, right? I'll play one and I'll get a sense of what the vibe is. And I will know, well, it's probably going to be within sort of like, 15 or 20% of this instrument that I've just played right here. So I get a sense of what it feels like, what it plays like, what it sounds like. I then order the bass. And ideally, in an ideal world, and a lot of the time, especially with like instruments like F-Bass, Ken Smith, who do I mention? Wall, there will be others as well. You're going to get something that's pretty close to what you've thought in your head.
Yep.
The flip side is when you just get all of the options and you can do whatever, it can be so, it's just a deep rabbit hole.
Oh, yeah.
But,
if it's a full custom shop and you can do anything, it's dangerous.
It's dangerous, Danger.
So dangerous.
Yeah. Danger. And look, if somebody really is like bought into the idea of doing that, and going down that experience with the manufacturer, what I would say is try and like look at the instruments they've been making in the past, because success leaves clues. They've probably been doing a lot of the same, like, kind of like mix of woods and stuff like that. Take Federa, right? A lot of their instruments are older, with Seymour Duncan pickups, with their circuitry and stuff like that, right?
In fact,
I know somebody that went to Federa, did the whole thing, got the boutique bass, and he said, I should have gone with one of their classic kind of,
The formulas,
He should have gone with their classic formula, because they know that formula. They believe in it. They've perfected it over time. But they do have to, cater to people like, us that turn up and they're like, I've got this piece of wood and it came out of a swamp 400 years ago, Black Carina, and I want it, they do cater to that as well. So,
It's great. Yeah.
It's great. I love it. And look, I've got all the boutique bass. I've got this here.
I know.
I did mention as well, I wanted to, let me just turn this volume down. I mentioned the giveaway earlier. We are giving away a bunch of basses.
Oh, bust them out, dude. Come on, bust them out.
Check this out.
What do we got?
And maybe is there any cons that I haven't mentioned?
Yeah. There's one for me.
Go for it. Then we'll talk about this. Oh, my God.
That's so bad. I know. It's just like good enough to eat. Lick it to make sure it's yours. Claim it. Yeah. But you're giving it away. The thing for me, it sounds great. Killing bass, man. Anyway, that's the Alinto Jazz 5. Yeah, okay. The one thing I'll say is depending on...
See,
you can't... Like, I can't even tell the story, dude.
Look at the
Oh, my God. I'm trying to be diligent and move on with the podcast.
So good. Anyway, move on. Take it.
No. I'm going to let you talk about that bass, dude. Tell us about that Alinto bass. Tell us about it.
I'm giving the bass away, again, with the F bass and all of the other basses I've been talking about. It's a five... This is an Alinto. Alinto, a badass
at
making... FSOs, fender-shaped object.
What does that mean? Fender-shaped object?
Yeah,
right. Just like here's Lulls, another, right?
Like the Sadowskis, like that class of boutique instrument.
Yes.
The Alinto is one of those. It's just beautiful. And it's just like the finish is incredible. The back of the neck is just insanity.
Unreal.
It's insanity. And then it's got these beautiful... like V here, like
not in the shape of the neck, but it's just in the finish. Is that called a stinger?
I don't know what it's called, but it's gorgeous. Anyway, if you want to check out all of the other prizes, we mentioned them earlier, but just go to winabassbuilderschool.com and you can enter for free over there. But yeah, I'm going to pull out a couple more boutique basses in a minute as well, just to show you. But dude, hit me with some more cons.
I mean, okay, I will say that when I was in boutique bass world in my 20s, I was playing in a rock band. And we got an opportunity to go play and make a record with a famous producer named David Bendith. And I'll never forget him saying to me, bring a Fender. Do you have a Fender Jazz or a Fender P bass? Either one. Bring a passive. It doesn't even need to be expensive. Just one of those. And I said, I have something better than that. And he was like, okay, but what is it? And I was like, well, I have
your six string carving
modulus. Like I had a six string modulus and I had Zons. I was really into like graphite necked boutique basses. And they're awesome. But
you're a producer's nightmare.
Yeah. And so I was like, don't worry. Producer guy. Like I was like, oh God, this guy, like this idiot. And when, of course I was the idiot. So we roll down, I've spent all this money and time and energy on these big boutique bassy things, right? I mean, the modulus was Cocobolo. I mean, it was similar looking to this, to this Smith. I show up and it was nice. He let me play my basses, but at the end of the thing, we were kind of talking and he was like, oh, what do you want to do? And do you want to be in this band forever? And I was like, I kind of want to play sessions. And he was really cool. He said, if you just want to do your own thing, play whatever bass you want, who cares, and make it your thing. And that's awesome. But if you want to play for other people, you have to get hip to some other sounds. And he's like, go get that jazz bass off the wall. And the studio we were working at had it was a sage green. I'll never forget it because it is burned into my mind. Mexican made sage green jazz bass that could be purchased around that time for $579.
Yeah.
And I got that thing. He's like, plug it in. We plugged it into the Neve console and he played my bass track that I'd recorded on my multi-$1,000, modulus. And he's like, okay, and now let's just do a pass of you playing that. And I played the jazz bass. I played one note, like the E, and it went, and it did a thing that was, and it sat in a way. And I was like, oh, and he was like, see, and with that, I'm going to add EQ and gain in this way. It's not going to poke out too much. It's going to sit, but it's going to sound fat and gritty. He's like, put that in the track. And I played this bass and he was like,
world changed. It's crazy. I was like, to go through that experience. Yeah.
So my con is what I associate sometimes with the real bright stuff. So not necessarily the FSOs, the Fender shaped objects, but active boutique-y woods, maybe graphite in the neck or whatever, right? Those sometimes to me can sound beautiful on their own. Like they're on perfect bass island. Like here it is, oh my God, everything is beautiful on Bass Island alone. Right? Yeah. You're in your room. It's Bass Island. You're not even thinking about the rest of the world. You're not thinking about anything else. You're just idyllic. The breeze, dude, it's 75 degrees. I don't know what that is in Celsius, but you know, it's like idyllic. It's lovely. There's a mojito, dude. You just, oh. And then, but it does not translate. You become weird bass guy on Bass Island. Do you know what I mean? Like on Bass Island, you become this insane bass nerd where like that's the only thing you want to play and you don't play well with others. And now you're like the awkward kid that has to try to join the right. So sometimes, man, I'm just bad at analogies, but I think that experience of an active sounding bass struggles. It doesn't play as well with others in certain genres, especially where I was in like rock world, a bright, clanky, active modulus was not fitting the vibe as well as a $500 Fender. And that was a hard fucking pill to swallow, dude.
So yeah, it kind of goes both ways, isn't it? Like what you were saying earlier is you need to be really well aware of the sort of like the room that you're walking into, right?
Yes.
Who's in the room, like playing to that? So making sure, because you can get a boutique instrument that is like an Oliva Capolo, but like something like that, or maybe a Michael Ull, but maybe one of the vintage ones, or
sure,
an Alinto. So there are these instruments that do fit into, you know, like you're going to turn up and the producer's not going to know anything. He's going to be like, oh, cool, he's got an FSO.
Great. Fender shape. Yeah, okay. Right.
He knows exactly what to do. She knows exactly what to do.
Yes.
Right? But if you do rock up with that, you know, fancy topped instrument, whatever, and again, we're not saying this is right or wrong, what will happen is you will create anxiety for the producer. They don't know what to expect. They're going to have to go at this thing from the ground up. They have got their playbook. When you turn up with a jazz bass or a P bass or something like that, right? You know, it can be a boutique instrument, but like an FSO version, right? They know exactly what to do. They just use their playbook. Oh, I do this, I do that, I do that.
Right.
It's going to sound great in the mix. But when you turn up with something that's not that, you are going to cause anxiety and they are not going to, they're going to be like, oh, like what do I need to do? It's like a complete ground up experience for them. So it's just going to be, it's not going to be as easy.
Right.
And also just worth this, I think it was Ken Smith that was telling the story, or maybe somebody that was using a Ken Smith. This did happen with Ken Smith basses in New York on the session scene, that all of the producers really wanted that Ken Smith sound.
Wow, right.
Yeah, like back in the, I think it was like late 80s, maybe early 90s, they wanted the Ken Smith sound. So
the clarity,
Yeah, if you were turning with a P bass, maybe they were stressed out at that time. They were like,
right, yes.
I want the Ken Smith sound. I know exactly what to do with it. And I can just use this playbook and it's going to sound great. So I think that it does exist. And right now, obviously like modern gospel, it's probably going to be more of a sort of like modern active sound that those producers want, but being very aware and not, to our earlier point, not just like letting your eyes make all of the decisions, right? Oh, the fancier it is, the better it is. Really consider what environment are you going to be playing in this? Like what music are you going to be playing? Who are you going to be playing it with? Like all of those things can really come into play here. And maybe there's a different conversation to be had. It's like, well, how do I get like, if I really want the single cut boutique bass, what do I need to do? Is there an option that I could, you know, a thing that I could do to make it work in that situation where you're playing amongst people that maybe want like a Fender or something like that? Like, is there something you could do? Anyway, conversation for another time. But yeah,
I don't know. I mean, the thing that I just wanted to say is I was really either or camp for a long time. In the beginning, you know, I was like, oh, a boutique. And then I had that experience of like, oh no, now it needs to be vintage. And I was playing in scenes and crews where the vintage thing was really admired and the boutique thing was totally clowned. You'd show up, if I showed up in some of the stuff that I was doing with a MTD or something, you just get laughed at. Yeah. And part of it is you have to have the confidence to do whatever you want to do, and accept the ramification. You want to show up with the wrong instrument the instrument that maybe is you but doesn't fit the thing. You have to be okay with the ramifications of that. Yeah. Or this is my actual recommendation. enjoy both sides and really know, as Scott said, how to read the room, yeah. right?
Send, Scott. Send your spouse this bit of the video. I need more bases.
Enjoy. Like, enjoy
Ian and Scott sides. Said, they said, right? This is an investment. It's actually, I'm not buying anything. I'm just transferring money from this, like in the bank, like that object, over to yes. this object. Yes. And I can sell it. It's actually not costing me anything. Just moving money.
Of course. Yeah. Yes. Yes. It's very close to liquid asset. I do think, though, I've arrived at a place where it's just lanes. It's just about lanes and camps. And you decide, you get to decide what you want to bring for the for whatever you're doing. And so if you find yourself playing in that blues gig and you want to do the Duck Dunphy bass thing, do it. But then also, if there's a church environment that you play in, have the Modern Active Five. You do not have to choose. Just let the situation, let the music choose. That's what I want to say, is just let the music choose. You did that fusion record, Scott. You did that on an active five-string boutique F bass. The banana bass. R.I.P., dude.
Yeah, dude.
R.I.P., the banana bass.
Yeah.
Right? But then sometimes you reach for a P bass when you go out and you play at the pub, right? Yeah, because that thing is going to provide with flats, and that is going to provide a different experience. So look, I do that too in my session world. There's sometimes where I'm playing the Spectre, right? In a situation that requires that kind of sound. And then there's other times where I'm playing more of an FSO, Fender shaped object, either a Fender or the Lull. Something short scale, right? That's real vintagey and plunky, like the Borinsaku behind me. And that stuff is just about, to me, it's about what the music needs. And it's also about what the aesthetic needs of the gig. Like if I'm taking something on tour or if I'm doing a gig, I think about how this is going to look on stage, how it's going to, is it going to fit into this vibe, but still be me. I don't think you have to just be like one or the other. You can have both. Buy all the bases.
And just to put it out there as well, if anybody's listening to this and they're just like, no, fuck you. I just want one instrument and I want it to be the way I want it to be. And damn, I'm going to turn up to all of it. I'm like, more power to you.
Absolutely.
Like, because I like Renegades. And I think there's always room for somebody to be like, I don't care. What we've been talking sort of like logically, right? Logically through the sort of like,
yes.
you know, this conversation. But ultimately, if you just want to do whatever the fuck you want to do, just do it. And ultimately, when it comes down to it, your playing is going to be the thing.
Like, of course.
Your playing's going to be the thing. So just, you know, that's, I guess, sort of like a... what I want to leave this with, right? It's really to do with your playing.
It's absolutely right.
And enjoy all of these instruments because it's just such a freaking fun place to be. Now, and, before the Jazz Bass special, oh my word, that thing is awesome. We're giving that away as well. WinnerBassBuilderSchool.com, free to enter. You know where to go. But dude. Oh,
look at that.
Oh, it's so good. Duff McKagan video coming. Keep a watch out.
Oh my God, yep.
Dude, give me.
Yeah.
Give me your favorite five boutique builders. Favorite five, and then we're going to call it.
Favorite five. But
favorite five.
It's too, that's too hard. I have this huge list. I'm giving.
Five.
Even the new ones and the old classics.
Do you want to do five of each? This is how weak I am. Do you see that? My wife takes advantage of that all the time. I'm weak. Yeah, go for it. Favorite five.
Okay. Favorite five. New ones on the scene. To me, my favorite so far that I think I've ever played is Lull.
Is the Lull.
So
FSO, Fender-shaped object.
I play it all the time. Lull is a big deal. Spectre reminds me of my youth. So Spectre is a very close second. I just don't have as many opportunities for this sound, but whenever I play it, I'm like, God, it makes me want to play music where this would fit it perfectly. So Spectre, yeah, man. I mean, I also have to say, just because I have interface with it, is Ken Smith, because it's so thumbprint. Yes.
Yeah.
You know, so the two Ken Smiths I have are the 85, and then this is a more modern 85 four string, and then the 21 six string. And I don't play them very often, but whenever I pick it up, I'm like, oh my God, I love it. I really want to say, even though this doesn't fit the aesthetic of like, of thinking about boutiques, this bass is my favorite short scale. It's the Vorensaku IMA, and I reach for it all the time. I love it. It's beautiful. And this is a really customizable thing too. Was that? I don't know. And then I'll pick a classic. I'm going to also shout out MTD. Because it's not something that I have ever really, I've never owned one. I owned an old Tobias, but I've never owned an MTD, but I like Mike. Whenever I've been to their booth at NAMM, it's so cool. The vibe is great.
Yeah.
And I hear players with them and I'm like, oh, that's such a sound. It's a very distinct sound.
Yeah.
And there's more. I mean, God, dude, but
odd one, like one that you just want to mention where you're just like, these guys are doing something special.
A new builder that's doing something really special is Strati. And we mentioned them on the NAMM video.
Yes.
They are doing something absolutely incredible. Two people, husband and wife team. They're amazing, beautiful. I've played some of their fretless instruments and I'm sneaking it in because you can't stop me. RKM, dude. RKM, who built that bass for Sharon, and I played one of their dual P's. That was the dual P thing was a really interesting experience. It was different, right? Yeah. So I guess for me, I come down to what's the thumbprint? Like, I want to hear your voice through this instrument. I want to hear a unique character coming out of these instruments.
Yeah.
So that's why maybe I didn't choose, maybe there's some on this list that I'm looking at that I'm like, I couldn't choose it because I couldn't hear the character of the instrument in the same kind of way. Those are the ones that resonate with me the most, but God, I'm pissed that I didn't say Dingwall, because what a character, dude. Oh,
okay,
I hate that you made me choose. Your turn. Sorry, I'm hogging mine.
Okay. I don't know how many did I give you?
Five. Asshole.
Well, well, you know, I've actually broken mine up into different categories.
So oh, God give damn
you,
it.
I'm going to give you five of each category.
Oh, you asshole.
Okay.
Cheers, divine.
Okay, right. So we've got...
Oh, God. You're the worst.
Sorry. Okay. I'm just sorting out I got my shit down here. Okay.
Yeah.
So here's the sort of like the classics. My favorite classic boutique basses, in no order, would be Federa. I think that they are undoubtedly kind of like the king of the boutiques. They've just done a great job of building an amazing brand, and their build quality is outrageous. And
all knew of you were going to say it.
The build quality of all of these people are outrageous, but Federa is outrageous. So Federa, number two, F bass.
Of course.
This isn't an F bass. That one, where is it? That one down there.
Incredible. Alan, don't you dare edit that out. That was my favorite thing that happened all day.
F bass. Yes. I love the BN. The BN series is my favorite. I've owned a bunch of BN5s. They are, I've said it before, I'll say it again, in terms of like my experience of playing a boutique instrument, they are the most consistent for sound. They all, I know exactly what I'm getting when I buy F bass.
Right.
Just love them. So F bass. And they, just to be very clear, Federa, they will build you whatever you want. It's about building your dream base. F-Base are not that. They are sort of like, this is our recipe. This is, you know, you can customize around the outside, but it's, they use a recipe. So Federa number one, and these are in no order, just like, you know, I'll just go with it. Federa number one, F-Base. Number three, Ken Smith. I absolutely love Ken Smith.
Yeah.
Maybe Ken Smith might be my desert island base if I had to take one.
Wow.
They just sound so good. I love them. Ken Smith. And I love that Ken is like the sort of like the base world's grumpy granddad.
Like, yes, he is.
There's so many people bitching about Ken on Talkbase. Oh my God. Like, Ken's fucking rock and roll, dude.
I know,
like,
yes.
The stories
you're right.
about Ken Smith are like outrageous. People call him, well, I'm sure this doesn't happen now, but like back in the day, right? Yeah. When Ken Smiths were sort of like, they ruled the world, the base world anyway. People call Ken Smith and like, he's like, are you a pro player? And they're like, no. And he's like, gsh. I'm like, people need to exist in the world like he's rock and roll. Ken Smith, I freaking love you. Anyway, so.
But if that would have happened to you as a kid, you would have been like.
Mortified, obviously.
Yes, dude. Yeah. I had the opposite experience with Mike Tobias, and that's why MTD went on my list. But Ken Smith did as well.
MTD on my list as well.
Okay, all right.
So we've got Federa, F-Base, Ken Smith, MTD. I love MTD. They're more like, I would say more like Federa, but they do a whole thing where they sort of like mix up all of the different woods and stuff like that.
Yeah,
Mike
right.
and Daniel have got this amazing approach and great sort of like... I guess sort of like experience that they've built up around sort of like how to make MTDs sound very different using the different woods that they use. Anyway, so MTD and like Justin Raines, also one of my favorite players, plays an MTD and sounds killing on it.
He's
and then
amazing.
Finally, of my favorite classics, Alembic.
I hate you. Alembic.
Alembic, dude.
Yeah,
Alembic.
I've never even played one,
but I love Jimmy Johnson, and therefore I love Alembic. Love by association. Okay, then we've got the boutiques, the boutique FSOs, Fender shaped objects. I'm gonna go Lull, I'm gonna go Sadowski, I'm gonna go Alinto, I'm gonna go Aliva Capolo, and I'm also gonna go wildcard Nordstrand. Because Nordstrand jazz basses and P basses,
yeah, right.
Even though like you can get them on Reverb for a steal, they are badass. They're my five Fender shaped objects. And finally, the Brits.
Stop. Stop.
The Brits.
Because essentially, stop I'm not before sorry. You. I'm happy that you're going to go down the Brits because you're going to say all the amazing British builders. And
I've
I know
already
what you're
going to
say. But I know what they are too. But I hate that you just named essentially all of the FSO companies. Like, you're like, Fender shaped objects. We'll just name them all. Dude, I had to leave Alinto out of mine because I thought I only had five.
Yeah, you had five.
Total.
Per category. You just didn't, you need to dig a bit deeper with the questions.
Dude. Oh my God.
Okay.
Obviously, Alinto is in the.
I've got two Brits. I've got Overwater. Because if I wasn't for Overwater, I wouldn't be playing bass, actually. There's a whole story there. But I love these basses. They're absolutely amazing. And obviously, I think that you left them off your list, but I'm going to go. Whoa. Whoa, dude.
Oh. Do you have one there? No, yours is at home. I'm gonna pull mine up right here.
Yeah, I think Wall obviously deserve love. And I've got one for my sort of like wild card. I have got this. Manet.
Wait, are they UK?
Italian, actually. No, I've got one wild card. This is my European wild card. That's like a separate list.
Oh my God. Just grabbing all, just like, you may as well have just read the fucking list down, dude. Yeah. Just read a list. God.
So Manet,
it's the made worst.
Made in Italy. Awesome bases. That's it. I'm out.
You didn't mention the a couple of British companies, though. You didn't mention Status.
Oh, Status. Yeah. I don't know if they are boutique. Maybe they are. They did some really cheap instruments as well. Oh, yeah. They did some really cheap instruments. So I think
right.
Some people, let them tell us in the comments. Tell
you
us.
You didn't
in the comments,
mention please. JD.
again, I like, oh, maybe they are boutique. Maybe they are boutique.
Of course they are boutique.
Okay.
I mean, that pink Mark King bass.
That is like, pretty cool. Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Moly.
Yeah,
pretty cool. But maybe that's it. Maybe you mentioned the other ones. Overwater Wall. Yeah.
We've got them all in. We've got them all in. Dudes, it's been wild. Let us know in the comments. I'm sure that we just spread some vicious lies and rumors today or whatever, you know. Let us know in the comments what you thought of the, what have you thought of the show. Again, we're giving away these basses, the one that Ian's holding right now, this beautiful green Music Man. We're also giving away a Lull IMA.
We're
giving away the Jazz Bass Special.
1985.
Linto. We're giving away the F Bass down there. We're giving away more prizes than we ever, ever have before. Winnerbassbuilderschool.com. Go there, sign up for free to win one of these incredible instruments and help us build schools in developing countries. And also, just like what I said before, man, if you consider subscribing to the SBL YouTube channel, you will be making not only our day right here, but you'll be making the entire team at SBL super happy. We've got a big, hairy goal, trying to hit 1.5 million subscribers this year, and we need your support to do so. So if we you sure enjoy do. The content, just hit that subscribe button and we'll love you forever. Ian, have you got any final thoughts, any words of wisdom before we call it?
So pissed at you for the list. So pissed.
I knew. As I was like typing out my evil
top
plan,
five.
I was like,
make him say it. Make him leave people out.
Yeah.
The bottom line for me is that you are confident and play the instrument that you want to play. It actually doesn't maybe matter as much as you think it does, but also be okay to bring something that you think fits the vibe, the style of music, right? If, now, if that's your six-string bass, killing. If you feel like, you know what, I should have a P bass, go for it. It doesn't mean you're a completely different player. It doesn't mean anything less, right? It's not going to subtract from your skills or from your identity. It's only going to add to it. So I think play the bass that you want to play, read the room, and enjoy the wide variety of instruments that are available to you at all times.
Beautiful. That's the pod. See you in a bit. Bye.
Take care, everybody.